Today's What Do You Think program is brought to you by your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents, Bill Weitzel in Pigeon, Corey Vollmer and Deb McBride in Elkton, Casey Yon in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswick in Unionville, and Tim Fritz in Bad Axe. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
9.5 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. Our guest in the studio today is Marie Most. She is the community nurse educator at Schurer Hospital. We've been talking about first aid for children. This is Parenting Awareness Month, and doing a whole series of shows this month on parenting. So thanks for being with us.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
It is Most.
Most. M-A-U-S-T.
Thank you. We're talking about first aid because first aid is the first thing you do before you may have to go to a hospital, but a lot of times that's all you really need.
That's right. Sometimes people don't really know what to do, and they'll overreact or get hysterical at something that could be very minor. And so it's important to know what to do and to know what you can do at home before you have to go to the emergency room.
Are most things generally pretty minor with kids? I mean, you know, we all hear the horror stories, but there's a million other incidents that nothing happens.
Well, that's true. A lot of times it's just a little boo-boo, a little cut, a little scrape, something that can easily be treated with a Band-Aid or a little ice and a little TLC, just a little comfort would take care of most of the injuries that happen to children.
And many times all the children really want is the TLC.
Well, that's true. And often a Band-Aid over something that you may not even be able to see is enough to let them know that you care and you love them and you want to take care of them, and you'll take care of them now and then also when the major things happen as well.
Is it important for the parent not to make more of it than it is? I mean, kids take their cues from parents and the people around them. You know, if they see people worried and it's emergency, they're going to get worried. Is the parent's attitude a big part of how well the kid handles things?
Well, absolutely. And I think the number one thing is just to remain calm and to not overreact. And, you know, for yourself, if you cut yourself and it hurts and it doesn't seem like much, and then you start looking at it and you see how much it's bleeding, and then it's easy to make it hurt a lot more. Well, it's the same way with children. If you take it calmly, if you say, okay, well, we'll take care of it, and then do what you can to take care of it, then they won't overreact and they won't get hysterical and will be easier to treat than if they are screaming and crying.
I imagine the first line of defense for first aid is preventing it in the first place. Prevention is a whole lot better than having to deal with it after the fact. Are we doing better at that, or are we overprotecting at times, kids? I mean, we were talking a little bit before the show, and I was looking back at my childhood, and a lot of things we did, you know, today, you know, you need knee pads and helmets and everything else, and we just did them.
Right. I think that there's a lot of things in place now that are very helpful to prevent injuries. One of the biggest things that's happened in my lifetime is the whole seat belt and the car seats. And that has prevented so many serious accidents, serious injuries to children. I remember one time when I treated a family in the emergency room where the car actually flipped over. They were actually on their way home from the hospital with this newborn baby. And the mother had a broken arm and the dad had a broken leg, but the baby was perfectly fine, was not injured at all, and so it was just showed how much this car seat saved this baby's life. Had it not been in a car seat, it likely would have been ejected from the car or had some serious injury.
Well, and children just coming home from the hospital are pretty weak in the neck and everything else. I mean, there's a lot of injuries that could have happened.
Absolutely. And so I think car seats are one of the best things that have happened recently. The other thing I think that is really important that not enough people know about is the helmets when you're riding bicycles. There's so many injuries that can happen to the brain and the spinal cord. And those kind of injuries are more serious. You know, you cut your arm and it will eventually heal. You break your leg, it will heal up. But a spinal cord injury or a brain injury is not so easily healed. The nerves don't just go back together again like bones and like muscles do. And so because of that, I think it's especially important to prevent head injuries, neck injuries, back injuries, those types of things.
Now, we didn't have helmets when I was a kid. Are we doing things, are kids doing things, seeing things on television and doing things that we never thought of? And maybe this is how they're getting hurt, because we basically rode. I mean, nowadays you see all the strange things people try to do on two wheels.
Well, that's true. I think that they're being challenged more by what they see on TV, and, well, maybe I could try that type of thing. Before, it was like what the neighborhood kid is thinking of and is challenging you to do is what you'd be more apt to do. And I think that actually we did see more spinal injuries, more serious injuries, but maybe it was not as well broadcast. It wasn't as publicized as those kinds of things are now. And so I think that we're doing a better job of preventing some of those injuries that could happen. You know, the skin, knees, and those kinds of things are going to happen no matter what. And if it hurts, but if we can prevent it, why not?
Now, something does happen. What is the first step? I assume you must analyze the situation.
That's true. Too often we rush in and try to fix the problem. I'm thinking here now of a serious injury. You know, a child falls out of a tree, a child gets hit by a car, something that's serious. I like to think about as though it's on a football field and how the whole football team and the whole stadium just waits while they go in and check that injured person out, make sure that they're okay before they pick them up and move them. And so if you are faced with a serious injury like that, just check the scene, first of all. Check and make sure that as a rescuer, you are not become in danger. Don't run out into the road and get hit yourself. You'll be no help to the child or to the injured person if you are not able to care for them. So check, make sure you're safe, and then go in and check the person before you start moving them around or caring for them.
Is this something that, you know, you got to really, in a way, bite your tongue or whatever, because mother's instinct is to just run out there and hold the child?
Well, that's true. I mean, that as moms, that's what we're trained, the whole mama bear kind of thing, and let me take care of my child kind of thing. And so it really takes some thought, a deep breath saying, okay, let's be calm. You know, this is, you know, we can handle this, and then go and check them out and to be very careful as you're approaching them, to not get hurt yourself and also to not further injure them. Too often people move a seriously injured person trying to help and can actually cause more serious injury. If the neck is broken, let's say, then by moving them, turning them, especially twisting the head and the shoulders, can actually cause paralysis, whereas if they would just be left lay in one place, they would not have a serious injury.
But you have to look at the situation. If it's a car accident and it's burning and it could explode, it might be good to move them a bit away from the vehicle as non-damaging as you can.
Absolutely. There are times that you do need to get in there and make the change, make a move, especially if you need to see, are they breathing or not? You'll have to be able to turn them over, and in order to do CPR, you would have to turn them over and to do CPR, or else to move them out of a burning building, let's say, or that type of thing. So there are occasional times that you would have to move them. And at those times, then you'll want to move them in as straight line as you can, to not twist the neck at all, to not twist the shoulders, to what I call a log roll, where the head and the shoulders and the body all goes in one motion. And so there's as little twisting as possible.
But again, if at all possible, leave it up to the professionals who will eventually arrive at the scene and do the right thing.
Absolutely. So call 911 and let the professionals take care of those serious injuries, those car crashes, those times when the person is unconscious, falling from a tree, those types of things where the injury is more serious.
Okay. Are there laws that, you know, you see something happening, you're supposed to react?
Yes, there is a Good Samaritan law that's in all 50 states now, where you are protected from any kind of lawsuit because you did something frivolously wrong. As long as you would do what the normal trained person would do or as for your training, then you don't have to worry about a lawsuit. So say I'm an RN, so I would need be judged at a little bit higher level than someone off the street who wouldn't necessarily know how to treat as much as I would. But basically in all 50 states, if you do what most people would do and is in the person's best interest, then you won't have to worry about lawsuits. The other thing to know as well with that is that an unconscious person is asking for help. So you don't have to worry, well, he can't give me permission or not. They are asking for help. And it's the same way with a child without a guardian or a parent there. It's just understood they are asking for help. You should go in and you should help them, and then we'll notify the parent and get the permission later.
And if they can't find the parent, then that has to go to, like, the police or somebody who can speak for the child. That's in a whole other realm of things that happen once you get to the hospital or to a medical clinic.
Right. It's understood that this child is asking for help and needs to be treated, and we will treat them until we can get a hold of the parent, and then we'll tell them this is what we did in the child's best interest. And we're talking about emergent care. We're talking about breathing for the person. We're talking about doing a life-saving kind of a thing. If there is something that needs to be, a decision needs to be made, and it will not further injure the child until the parent can get there, then we'll wait until we can contact the parent.
Okay. Now, the different types of injuries, we talked about head and spinal, but there's more typical injuries. People, cuts, bruises, get a sliver, you do all these types of penetrating type of injuries to the skin. Are most of those really not an emergency? They're just more of a rite of passage that parents and kids seem to go through?
Right, and most of these, probably 98% of these, can be treated at home with good first aid care. Basically, for any kind of cut, scrape, just minor injury, what you'll want to do is wash it with soap and water for 5 minutes, just regular old soap. If you have some antibiotic soap, that's okay, antibacterial soap, but if you just have regular hand soap, that works as well too. It's a lot of just the running water and scrubbing it as much as you can for 5 minutes, and that will actually flush out the bacteria that might cause infection. You know, most of us think that, oh, we need to put peroxide in it or betadine because that's what mom did. Actually, those types of things...
They did that just before you went through the ceiling, but okay.
Right, exactly. But actually, that causes further tissue damage and actually delays healing. And so even though it looks like it's bubbling and looks like it's healing and good things, it actually is going to take longer for that injury to heal than if you just use good old soap and water and a lot of it. You may have to be creative in how to get a three-year-old to wash this wound for 5 minutes. Sometimes you can just put them in the bathtub and have them just kind of soak it and wash it that way. Sometimes you have to make games out of it. Whatever you can do to wash it for as long as you can.
And I suppose one measure of how bad of an injury is if you can get the bleeding to stop.
That's right.
I mean, there are some kids, you know, there will be like a child, a boy with maybe hemophilia that you weren't, maybe not aware that it's to this level and won't stop. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's other things that just happen. They're just so big, or they hit something that's a larger blood vessel that just doesn't want to stop.
That's right. And so if it's a major wound and it's bleeding significantly, you'll want to put some pressure on that wound. You'll want to just apply pressure with a clean bandage. If you have a gauze bandage from your first aid kit, that's wonderful. But most of us don't have those right handy as we'd like to have them. And so like a clean paper towel.
Women had everything in their purse. They open it up and it's like, my gosh, it's, you know, big box store.
Well, most of us do, but not all of us. And invariably, those bandages are in a far-off place, and so you just use what you can and keep it as clean as you can. So a paper towel works well, a clean washcloth, handkerchief, that type of thing works very well. Something clean and just put pressure, just apply direct pressure on that until you can get the bleeding to stop. If you have a roller bandage at that point, you could roll it up and wrap it up. If it continues to bleed, put additional bandages on top of that. Don't take the original dressing off and then rebandage it, because even though it looks like it hasn't stopped at all, it has started to clot a little bit, and taking that original bandage off will actually make it re-bleed some more. So you'll want to just bandage it up, put pressure on, and the major thing is pressure directly on the wound.
And how do you know how much pressure? I mean, you're an adult, they're children. What you find to be not so much of a pressure might hurt them. I mean, You just got to feel it, or is there some sort of gauge that, you know, obviously the arm's turning blue, back off, but I mean, you know.
Right, you'll want to put some firm pressure on it, and it depends, too, how much bleeding it is. If you've pretty well stopped the bleeding, then you can relax a little bit on the pressure, that type of thing. And a lot of people say, oh, I learned in Boy Scouts how to put a tourniquet on. Well, tourniquets are no longer advised. What was happening is too many people were overreacting to a small wound and were putting a tourniquet on and cutting off the blood supply to the whole limb, the whole arm, the whole leg, and actually causing permanent nerve damage, and people were losing the use of that limb because of a minor cut or a minor wound. So now they're recommending not to use tourniquets at all and to put just pressure on the wound itself.
Well, so much now for snake bites, but okay. Nosebleeds, are they common in children? Is this something you really need to worry about? Parents see something happening and sometimes overreact, and you folks at the hospitals, you see it come into the ER and you look at it and, yeah, he's got a nosebleed.
That's right. And nosebleeds seem like they have a lot of blood. And some children are more prone to these than others. One of my sons seemed to have a nosebleed all the time when he was growing up, and for no reason. Sometimes the nosebleeds can be caused by trauma, getting hit in the face, that type of thing, the ball, getting hit in the face with a ball. But a lot of times it just happens for no reason. It just automatically starts. The best way to treat these is by putting pressure again on the nose. Pinch the nose shut and just hold it there for 10 minutes and then slowly release it. And you'll want to lean forward as you are pinching your nose shut. That way you can see if you've stopped the bleeding or not. And that also prevents all that blood from going down the back of your throat and swallowing it and causing nausea and stomach ache and that type of thing. Now you'll have to be creative again on how to get a four-year-old to be quiet and let you hold their nose for 10 minutes. You may have to play a game. You may have to put a video in and watch a video together, read a book, whatever, just to hold that nose together for as long as you can or until the bleeding stops. I'd also not recommend putting anything up into the nose. Some people like put little pieces of Kleenex in or something like that. But often when you take that out, eventually it'll start bleeding again. And so it's best to not put anything in, but just pinch the nose shut.
So all the simple old remedies that we had years ago still seem to be pretty good, but I'm sure there are some that are not.
That's right. There are some things that you just really don't want to do. I have to think about Grandma's remedy for burns. She would put butter on it, and that actually would trap the heat in there and would cause further damage and cause more burning. And so now we say no butter, no anything that has ointment in. You'll want to avoid that and just use creams that say specifically first aid cream on it.
You know, you're talking about trapping the heat in there. I just think of butter as being a food product where there could be bacteria and stuff in it that, you know, isn't exactly clean. Just me, after it sits around a while, it does get kind of funky.
That's true, and you don't want to put anything on any kind of wound that might be dirty or might have bacteria in. You'll want to keep it as clean as possible to prevent infections.
So we're talking about burns. What do you do?
Well, you'll want to cool it. You know for yourself when you touch something hot how it hurts and how much it feels good just to put it in some cold water. And that's the best thing, is some cool running water or just a pan of water. We don't recommend putting ice directly on the burn because that can actually cause further tissue damage. And so you'll want to just put it in some cool water and to keep it cold. Once you've got it cooled, then a minor wound, we're talking a first degree or a second degree, something that's either red or has a little blister on, you'll be able to cool it off, and then you'll maybe want to dress it with a little first aid cream or a bandage. You want to keep that blister intact as long as you can, because that again will prevent infection. If you open the blister up, then it opens that open skin to bacteria and that type of thing. Now, if it's a major wound, we're talking a large amount of body surface that's burned, or else a third-degree burn, you'll want to get them to ER right away, probably call 911 for that. But if what I've also seen is like a second degree burn or a burn on the hand or something that really hurts, what I recommend is actually just leave that hand right in that bucket of water, bring them to ER, bucket and all, and we'll give them something for pain, and then we'll worry about cleaning them up and dressing them and that type of thing. Because burns hurt. Burns are one of the most painful things. And so if you can help treat that child, and then we will give them something for pain before we actually have to treat it and have to work with it.
Well, it hurts. It's your body's way of saying, don't do that again.
That's
especially
right.
If you're touching the hot pot or got your hand accidentally up on the stove there looking at what's going on. And imagine that's where a lot of the burns come into play.
Right. And a lot of those burns can be prevented again just by thinking ahead of what is hot out here. You know, what could my child touch, and how can I prevent that from happening? The pot handles on the stove that the child can reach up there and pull down on top of them. Those pot handles need to be turned toward the back of the stove that they can't get to. Be careful even when they use the microwave, because sometimes the things in the microwave can be too hot to handle. And they're, I think like an 8-year-old child getting something hot out of the microwave can easily spill it on their hands and can cause a damage.
They tend to splatter too once you just move them, you know, after they've microwaved. That can also be a problem.
That's true. So you'll want to prevent that. Another thing to know too is, if a child has a major burn to the face or to the neck, you'll want to get them to ER as fast as you can, because if they have a burn to that area, you also know that they breathe in some hot air, and there's a good chance that they have damage internally as well, and their airway may close up. And so often when they come into ER and they have a deep burn to the face and the neck, even if they're breathing normally now, we'll sometimes go ahead and put a tube into their airway and protect that airway and breathe for them, just in case there might be swelling later on down the road and run into problems that we don't want to happen. So if any kind of burn to the face and the neck that's significant, then we'll need to treat them aggressively.
It also seems like that's the best way to assure that if somebody professional looks at it, that it'll minimize scarring.
That's true.
Because those are areas that you really get concerned about. You got a scar on your arm for a kid, that can be cool. Face for the rest of your life is not.
That's true. And especially in any really young child, a significant burn is more important than a adolescent or a adult even, because it covers more of their body surface, the percent of the wound does. And any kind of burn to the fingers or to the feet, to the genitals, those type of things will need to be treated more aggressively than something to the arm.
Are all burns basically equal in damage? I mean, is a burn from scalding water different than a burn from an actual fire? I mean, are there different things that come into play in what they actually do and how they need to be treated?
Well, a chemical burn, let's say they spill something on them, a chemical that burns, that will need to be rinsed with a lot of water and get that chemical off their body. As far as a flame versus hot water isn't as necessarily different, except that often with a fire burn, it often catches the clothes on fire, that type of thing. And so sometimes there's actually clothing that's stuck into the wound, that type of thing. And again, that would be something that you'll want the professional to take out rather than you try to care for that yourself.
Okay. We're going to pause for 60 seconds and we'll be back with more.
If you're a farmer, you should know Farm Bureau Insurance. After all, you know how tricky insurance can be. Did you remember to add that new planter you bought? What about the truck? Did you switch that over? The equipment you'll be using will need to be added. If you're a farmer, you should know Farm Bureau Insurance, because Farm Bureau Insurance works with you to get all your needs taken care of. From the implements and trucks to the insurance on your workers, your local Huron County Farm Bureau agent will walk with you every step of the way. If you're a farmer and you don't know Farm Bureau Insurance, call one of your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents today. It could just be one of the most important calls you make. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
Contact one of your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents, Deb McBride or Corey Vollmer in Elkton, Casey Yan in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswick in Unionville, Tim Fritz in Bad Axe, or Bill Weitzel in Pigeon.
Michigan, my Michigan.
We are back, and again, our guest today is Marie Most. She is the community nurse educator at Schurer Hospital. We've been talking about first aid in children as It is Parenting Awareness Month, and one of the things parents always have to do is take care of the little bumps and bruises and the other things that kids bring home for you to fix. We talked about burns. What about sprains, strains, and broken limbs? I mean, is it always easy to know the difference? I mean, kid comes and they're kind of limping. First reaction might be to shoot them on and get some x-rays.
Well, often it's hard to tell. There are some times that you know that this is broken. When the arm is bending, obviously, the wrong way. When the bone is sticking through the skin. When the child has felt a pop or if it's a more serious injury, when you think they've fallen from a tree, they've got hit by a car, you would think that there could be a better chance of them actually having a broken bone. Often these can be treated with what's called RICE. It's rest, immobilization, cold, and elevating. So that would probably be one of the first things you would do if there is a sprain or a strain, a possible broken bone. You're not really sure. It's nothing obvious. And use your acronym RICE to remember to rest. Don't let them use that limb for a while. Let them rest and see how it responds to treatment. Immobilize if you can, put it up, elevate it, or just not use that aggressively, that joint aggressively.
Maybe an ACE bandage, keep the swelling down, that type of thing.
That type of thing would be great. Or if you have some kind of splint or something like that, just, it doesn't
Again,
have to be.
Don't wrap it too tight.
Exactly. We don't want to cut off the circulation here.
Blue toes are a bad sign.
Absolutely. And then you'll want to use some cold on it. An ice pack of some kind helps any kind of sprain, strain, break, that type of thing. I always kept a pack of frozen peas in my refrigerator, and it was a lifesaver often just to give to my child as they came and they complained of a bump or a bruise or whatever. And it was a way of letting them know I cared and to put that ice on. If you can leave it on for 20 minutes, that's good. And for a more serious injury, that would be great. But often, about 3 minutes, the child was tired of it, and he'd run, go play, and then I could put the peas back in the freezer and use them for the next time.
How long before symptoms don't subside before you really should get it checked? Because there's a certain point where bones are going to heal improperly if there is a crack, and, you know, you're going to want it in the right position to heal.
Well, that's true. If you do think that it is broken, they ought to go ahead and go into ER then. After about a day, if they are using it less instead of more, then you'll need to think about, oh, I think I need to go get this x-ray, get it treated. And often those kinds of things, even for us as professionals, we're not able to look at it and know if it's broken or not. Those that aren't quite so obvious, those small cracks, those small fractures, those type of things. And x-ray is needed in order to diagnose those kinds of things. So I guess I would say, unless it's obvious, try the ice, try the elevation and the rest. And if that doesn't work in a day or two, then go ahead and see the doctor or the emergency room and get it treated.
Okay. I want to talk about poisoning because kids get into everything. And some things smell good and don't necessarily be good for you. I mean, you all hear about, you know, how cats and dogs lap up the antifreeze. It's got glycol in it. It's kind of sweet. So, and then they end up getting sick. And kids, anything that's in a bottle looks like fair game because they don't read the labels.
Well, that's true. And it's amazing what the children can get into. When my one son was a toddler, he got into some fertilizer. I guess he thought he needed to grow. I'm not sure. But he ate some fertilizer, and so I ended up calling the poison control number. And I would encourage all the parents to keep this number handy. It's 1-800-222-1222. It's the same number that we call in the emergency room when you bring your child in. So you could use that as your first defense and see, is this something that's serious that I need to take him to the emergency room, or is there some treatment I can do at home? So I called the poison control number, and they wanted to know a lot of things. They wanted to know how old my child was, about what he weighed, how much of the fertilizer he ate, how long ago he ate it, how much he ate, what kind of fertilizer it was, all those kinds of things. And they put it into their computer database, and they told me, it's perfectly fine. It's just like a mild soap. Don't worry about it. He should be fine. So I didn't worry about it. And about 4 hours later, they just called back to check on him, make sure that he was doing okay. He was doing fine. It saved me a lot of trauma, a lot of anxiety, and I didn't have to worry about what I should do and how I should treat him.
So in that instance, the first thing to find out is what they've been putting down their throat, because that's the big key as to how serious it is.
Right, and that's one of the reasons that it's so important to keep all of your household cleaning and all of your medications and all those types of things in the original bottle, because if you put it in something else, then you don't know what to tell the poison control when you call them to say what they got into.
Also, kids at a certain age aren't very well at vocalizing, you know, well, it's that one, that one, that one. You know, they'll just point to the kitchen cupboard.
Right. And you often don't know how much they ate or how much they drank or what they got into. I know that one time when same son got into some Robitussin and was trying to drink some of that, we decided, well, there had only been a half a bottle to begin with. There wasn't that much out of it. Robitussin tastes nasty. He likely didn't drink a lot. But there again, it was the poison control that helped me to determine that and figure that out.
And you noticed he wasn't coughing.
That's right. He didn't cough for a while, except I was not very happy with the child. Now, one of the major places that children get poisoned is actually at Grandma's house. Grandma often will have her pills out on the cupboard because it's easy for her to remember to take her pills because she has them out there where she can see them. Well, the child goes there, sees these pieces of they look like candy, okay? And so he'll eat them. And so that's one thing to look around when you take your child to another place. You may have all of your cupboards locked and barricaded, but a place like Grandma's house or a friend's house may not have as many safety things in place, and the child may be able to get into some of the things and could easily get poisoned. One of the other things that has recently changed is we used to tell people to keep syrup of Ipecac in their first aid kit, and that was something that they gave in order to make the child vomit. Now they're saying that that's not a recommendation anymore, and they're not recommending that you get the child to vomit unless the poison control people tell you specifically to do that. Too many people were making the child vomit for reasons that were not necessary or were actually harmful, maybe something like a petroleum product like gasoline, kerosene, that type of thing. It will actually burn on the way down and on the way back up. And so it's best to not have them vomit at all.
So you
for those types
twice
of things.
The damage to
exactly.
the throat.
And can actually cause damage to the lungs and that type of thing because of the whole trauma of vomiting. So only have them vomit if the poison control tells you that that's the best thing to do.
And I imagine that's probably a rare case with them because they're more likely to say, get them to a hospital now.
That's true. And the poison control will tell you as well, okay, you need to take them to the emergency room now. And when you do come, please bring your bottle of whatever they ate or drank with you, and then we're more able to treat them appropriately for whatever they got into at that point.
Along with poisoning comes the thing of choking. Kids stick anything in their mouth at a certain age. That's mainly their main sensory perception is about the texture. Everything is in the mouth, and things go in that necessarily shouldn't or don't go down. What is the best course of action at that point?
It's very important to prevent the choking, like you alluded to. Watch your surroundings, keep the Legos out of the infant's reach, that type of thing.
This is mainly why toys say, you know, 2 years and older, is because the pieces can be a little smaller than they would be for a one-year-old who's shoving everything in their mouth.
That's true. And when we teach the babysitter training course, we tell them anything that's small enough to go through a tube, a toilet paper tube, is too small for an infant to put in their mouth. And so that kind of gives you a gauge to say, okay, I shouldn't let them put this in the mouth or not. And so
people might think that's really large, but you ever hear a kid cry, you know how big their mouth can be.
That's true. And prevent things like candies. One of my boys, we went to out to eat at a pizza place one time, and my two oldest boys wanted the candy, and so I gave my two-year-old the candy as well. Well, the next thing I knew, he was turning blue, and he wasn't breathing. Ooh. And here he had swallowed that piece of candy and had gotten choked on it. So at that point, I had to spring into action and do the abdominal thrust. And you, what you do is you just try to get that item out of their throat by pushing on their stomach and fairly hard and fairly severely in order to get it to pop out.
Is that the Heimlich maneuver that's sometimes known as?
That's right. It's the same thing as the Heimlich maneuver. And for anyone over one, you would actually do it into the abdomen and do it with enough force to get it to pop out. The idea here is that there's always a little bit of air in the lungs, and you're using that air in the lungs to push that object up and out of their airway. By pushing on the abdomen, you're making the diaphragm go up and putting pressure on those lungs to pop that object up. Now, a small child under one, you would actually turn them on their back and hit them between their shoulder blades and try to get the object out that way. So if they're under one, you'll not want to use the abdominal thrust, but actually hit them on their back and then turn them over and do chest thrust on their chest as well.
And gently. They are a child. You're panicking, and your adrenaline is flowing.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to keep enough control to not do more harm than good here.
Right. And if they do go unconscious, if they are not able to get any air, then that's when you would want to call 911 and start the CPR, that type of thing. So you'll want to get help coming if you're not able to get it out yourself.
And I would imagine no matter what type of a situation you had, if it did pop out, you still should have the child checked afterwards. Lack of oxygen in a young child, not a good thing.
That's right. You'll want to keep air to their brain and to their heart and that type of thing. So if it's been a major injury, you'll want to get them checked out afterwards.
Okay. Other things that kids get into, if you spot them having like a seizure. I mean, I think that would probably be one of parents' worst nightmares. Because
it
is. You really don't know what's going on and how serious it is. You know, some people have mild tremors. Other people have grand mal seizures type of things. I would imagine that's a clue you need to get them to a doctor.
That's true. Seizures are one of the most frightening things that a parent can experience. Sometimes seizures can be caused by just a high fever, that type of thing. But sometimes it's caused by unknown items or unknown diagnosis. But you'll want to get it checked out if your child does have a seizure. If you do see a child having a seizure, you'll want to move everything out of their way so that they don't happen to hurt themselves or strike their hand or their leg against an object, a chair, a piece of furniture, that type of thing. And you'll want to not put anything in their mouth. We used to be taught to put something in their mouth to prevent them from biting their tongue or that type of thing, but actually that causes more trauma, more damage than just letting them alone. If this is a child who you have not known had a seizure disorder or any problem, you'll want to get them to the hospital or to the doctor. And most of these seizures only last for a minute or two. It seems like a lifetime when it's happening, but it usually lasts only a minute or two. And so if it's someone who has had seizures and you know that they have a seizure disorder, you'll usually wait for about 5 minutes and then call 911. But if it's something that's new for this child, then you'll want to go ahead and get them some help right away.
Other things people need to be concerned about as we're getting close to the end of our time here?
One thing that people wonder about is the whole bee sting thing that often I've had people come into the emergency room with a child who's got bit on the hand with a bee, and they'll say, oh, he's allergic to it. See how his hand is swelling? Well, that's not an allergic reaction. That is a normal reaction to...
That's a histamine reaction, isn't it? Something your system saying this isn't good.
Well, that's true. And it's not good, but it's kind of, like you said, a rite of passage. Put a little ice on it, maybe meat tenderizer, something like that. But
you need to make sure the stinger is out, because some
yes.
leave them in, and you almost see them pulsating in the end there, and others go in and out on their own.
Right. If the stinger is left in there, you'll want to take a blunt object and scrape it across in order to get it out. Don't use the tweezers or your fingers to squeeze it and pull it out, because by squeezing it, you'll actually inject more venom into the arm or wherever the stinger is. So you'll want to use something like a credit card, a butter knife, something blunt to scrape that stinger out. Use some ice will help to minimize the swelling and that type of thing. Now, a true allergic reaction is when you get stung on the hand and then your mouth starts swelling or your lips start swelling, your airways, you start having trouble with breathing, that type of thing. Then that's the time you need to come into the emergency room and get emergency care. Some people have epinephrine pens that they use for those types of allergic reactions, and that's when you would need to be taught as a parent how to administer those and how to keep them handy.
But that isn't something your doctor is just going to give you in case it's going to be because there's been an episode, we've found that there is a problem, and if it gets stung again, it could be even worse.
That's true. That's exactly true. Those people are those who have had some major episodes where they have had an allergic reaction and need some treatment for it. So in those cases, you would want to have the epinephrine pen handy and know what it is. A lot of people say that they're allergic to dust and mold and that type of thing, and those are true allergies, but they're not what I call anaphylactic shock or anaphylactic allergies, where it cuts off breathing and you can't, your lips swell and those types of things.
The ones that have the sudden onset of symptoms that are just overwhelming.
That's correct. And some people have that with bee stings. Some people would have it with some kind of severe food allergies. They have been known to have those kinds of things. Other people can be allergic to, say, milk and have an upset stomach. And yes, that's an allergy, but that's not a crisis. It's not a time that you have to go to ER unless you have those kinds of reactions when you drink the milk or the peanut butter or whatever you're allergic to.
Are people usually allergic to more than one thing, or can it be that specific as only bees?
It can be as specific as one thing, and even some can be just allergic to just one kind of bee or one kind of wasp, that kind of thing. But you don't really know until you've been stung by a variety of them, and that's not fun. So
no, that's no way to learn.
That's right. That's the hard way of learning.
If people have questions or having kids, are there like parenting classes or seminars or things they can go to? Is there stuff on the web that they can get information that they need?
There are some good websites that they can go to find out what to do and how to deal with these situations. I also encourage parents and the general public to take some first aid classes as well. We offer first aid classes regularly at Shure Hospital for the community just to be prepared in a time of emergency. Another good thing to learn that we really didn't discuss at all was CPR and how to do CPR for the infants or for the children, and be prepared in the case that there is not breathing or the heart quits beating.
Okay. I thought kids were easy to raise.
Well, they don't come with an instruction manual, and so there's a lot of things that you don't know that you don't know until you get to that emergency situation, and then, oh, I wish I knew what to do with this.
I think some parents wouldn't mind not having the instruction manual, just like a warranty.
That's for sure.
Thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Our guest today has been Marie Most. She is the community nurse educator at Shure Hospital. We've been talking about some of the common things that parents go through with kids as they're growing up. Again, a lot of good information on the website. And if you have a poison problem, keep it by the phone. There is a poison prevention number, 1-800-222-1222. Great number to have right out the phone.
That's for sure.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.
Today's What Do You Think program was brought to you by your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents. Bill Weitzel in Pigeon, Corey Vollmer and Deb McBride in Elkton, Casey Yon in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswick in Unionville, and Tim Fritz in Bad Axe. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
Keep your radio at work tuned to AM 1340 WLEW for the best country hits and classics.
So good looking. Hold yourself together like a pair of bookends. But I've not tasted all your cooking. Who are you when I'm not looking? Do you pour a little something on the rocks? slide down the hallway in your socks. When you undress, do you leave a path? Then sink to your nose in a bubble bath.